Hey, it's Sean here. Welcome to the new blather. First thing I wanted to mention was that I got a third rejection letter for my short story Oberon's Paradise. That took like over 3 months for them to send a rejection letter. That was from Intergalactic Medicine Show, I think it's what it's called. So that's too bad. Another rejection. Boohoo. It's my first rejection of the year, I guess. And it might be my only one because I'm so lazy I'm not going to write any more short stories and send them out. So I don't know what I'm going to do with that short story next, if I'm going to send it off to another publisher or if I'm just going to sit on it for a while and do a different sort of project with it in the future. I guess I could send it out, but I think I already... The other two... places I already sent. I'm not really sure where else to send it. I'm not sure. Anyway, so that got rejected. So that's too bad for that. And I haven't really written any other short stories since then. I have one I wrote, and I have to get that critiqued, and then I can start sending that out. And I'm not sure. Yeah, I haven't really written anything else besides that, besides my novel attempts, which of course aren't finished at all. So the other thing I wanted to mention was I was listening to Twit This Week in Tech, with Leo Laporte and all those people. And so they were talking about, Microsoft Songsmith in their last podcast. I'll post a link to the podcast, to that episode of the podcast. Now, I had heard about Songsmith when they were still researching it. They were calling it My Song. And there was a YouTube video about it that I had favorited. And I'll post a link to that YouTube video. And it's just the guy, I think it's, what's his name? Dan Morris, I think his name is. And he's talking about how he and some other people researched it and the making of it, kind of. And it was really interesting. I thought it was very interesting. And I didn't know they were so close to making a full package, a product that people can download and use instead of it just being a research thing. So I was pretty cool. I thought it was really really cool when they renamed it Songsmith and it came out as a downloadable for anybody to download. So I of course downloaded it and tried it out, and I was very impressed. I thought it was great, but on a there are two bad things. On Twit, they didn't seem to like it. I don't know if they liked they. I don't think they didn't really see it the way I see it. They were kind of laughing at it, it seemed like. So if they liked it, it was because they thought it was funny. They didn't seem to see it as a very serious endeavor. I think they were kind of approaching it the wrong way. Maybe not the wrong way. I don't think they were approaching it the way that you would get the best use out of it. The creators of Songsmith created this video on YouTube, and I'll post a link to that video too. And it's supposed to be sort of like an advertisement for Songsmith. And it's really... terrible. It's cheesy, and it's just nobody would use Songsmith in the way that they show in the commercial. It's just a terrible commercial. It's just blah. I think a lot of people will view the commercial and view Songsmith in a poor light just because the commercial is so bad. Now, if I were advertising Songsmith, I have no idea what I would do for a commercial. And in that sense, I guess maybe the commercial is good because it at least gets the word out there that Songsmith exists, even if it kind of shows it in a weird, awkward, cheesy, bad light. But I have no, if I were advertising, I have no idea what I would do. Maybe I wouldn't advertise it at all. I would just put it out there, and that way people who are interested will, hopefully do a word of mouth kind of thing, and it'll spread around, maybe, perhaps, or maybe it might not get any audience at all if you did it that way. But the commercial just isn't, it's just really weird and awkward. And I don't think it, I'm not sure how good it is for Songsmith. I don't know. Maybe it's, you know, again, it gets the word out there, so it may, you know, does some good. But it's really cheesy. And so you're viewing the commercial, and so, you know, people can view the commercial and think bad thoughts about Songsmith because the commercial doesn't show it in the best light. And another thing that people are using it for is they'll sing... Okay, let me explain what Songsmith is if you don't already know, if you didn't go check out any of the videos I linked to. Basically, you sing into the microphone, or you play an instrument into the microphone, and it'll come up with a stylistic chordal accompaniment for your recording. And it uses some styles from Band in a Box, and the sounds it uses are from Garryton, which is, of course, what I was really intrigued by, because I use Garryton for almost all of my musical projects. So that's really cool. I'm a terrible speaker. That's what you use Songsmith for. By the way, that's why I'm trying to do this podcast, to help me become a better speaker. Like that's ever going to happen. So you sing into the microphone and it comes up with musical accompaniment. So what they were using for, what some people seem to be using it for, and what they were kind of laughing about it on Twit, was that people will sing songs that they already know and things that they already have chordal accompaniment expectations for in their head. They'll sing the songs that they already know, and then Microsoft Songsmith won't come up with the same chords. It'll come up with plausible chords, which is why it's funny, but it won't come up with the same chords. And so it'll sound awkward and wrong at the same time, because as a listener, if you're listening to a song that you already know, then you're going to expect chords that you know, you're going to expect the chords that really went with the song. So it's just going to sound wrong when you hear different chords. And so don't use it for that. I don't think that's not the intention, is that you sing songs you already know and it makes it sound right. That makes no sense. So of course it's going to be funny and amusing and sound wrong and kind of lame if you do it that way. What I think it excels at is if you are singing into the microphone. First of all, it's good if you're not a very good singer, like me. I'm a terrible singer. You'll still be changing your pitch when you sing. Just about when anybody sings, they'll still be changing their pitch somewhat when they sing, even if they're not very good with the actual singing technique or whatever, or you know, if your voice doesn't have a very enchanting tone, or if you can't use vibrato at all, or whatever makes people a bad singer. Anyway, but it'll still come up with plausible accompaniment for your bad voice, which is kind of interesting for those of us who can't sing at all. It'll come up with plausible chords, so that's pretty cool. But the other thing that I really like about it is that when you improvise, it's basically an idea giver. It helps you come up with ideas. So you improvise into the microphone with your voice or on an instrument, you know, melodies, just totally improvised melodies. Or maybe melodies that you've had a while in your head, but you still don't know what chords to put with them, or something like that. Made up stuff that's never been, written before. Not songs that you already know. You know, you put in new stuff to it, completely new songs, and then it, with the chordal accompaniment, it gives you ideas. Now, with those ideas, I wouldn't sit there in Songsmith and try to create the final product in Songsmith. That would be stupid. That would be kind of lame. That would sound really, really bad. And so some people are kind of criticizing Songsmith because they're afraid that people will, you know, use Songsmith and Songsmith only to create their final product, and it'll sound terrible and very amateur. Well, yeah, of course, duh, well, but that's not what, I don't think that's what you would want to do with Songsmith anyway. You would want to take the idea Songsmith gives you and then use it, you know, in some other project. Especially, you know, one of the things Songsmith does is it pretty much stays within the same key within the whole, within whatever you're singing. So you're not going to sing a 5-minute song into Songsmith, especially if you have key changes in your song, and expect it to come up with the complete accompaniment for your song, and then you just hit export and you're done, and that's your song, and you put it on a CD and send it off to CD Baby and make millions of dollars when they put it on iTunes. That'd be stupid, completely stupid idea. You know, you use song, it's an idea giver. So that, I think that's the best use of Songsmith. And it works, in my opinion, it works really well as an idea giver. You improvise into it, it provides chordal accompaniment, and then you listen to that chordal accompaniment, and sometimes it can surprise you, and it gives you ideas for material you can use in other projects. Instead of singing songs you already know and laughing when it doesn't come up with the chords you have memorized in your head that actually go with the song. So there. Okay, so that's the first long, rambling, blathering point I wanted to make. That's why the podcast is called Blather. The other thing I wanted to talk about was I got a book from the library, a book from the library the other day called Predictably Irrational by Dan Ariely or whatever his last name is. Ariely, whatever. I'll post a link to it on Amazon.com or something. And it's called Predictably Irrational, The Hidden Forces That Shape Our Decisions. And if I just read the inside of the cover here, it says, just so you can get a sense of what this book is about, why do our headaches persist after taking 1 cent aspirin but disappear when we take 50 cent aspirin? Okay, that actually never happens for me. Whenever I have a headache, no amount of aspirin ever makes it go away. Why does recalling the Ten Commandments reduce our tendency to lie even when we couldn't possibly be caught? Why do we splurge on a lavish meal but cut coupons to save 25 cents on a can of soup? Why do we go back for second helpings at the unlimited buffet even when our stomachs are already full? And how did we ever start spending $4.15 on a cup of coffee when just a few years ago we used to pay less than a dollar? And that's basically saying if you go to Starbucks, you're an idiot. Or if you buy anything at Starbucks, you're an idiot. but it's a very good book so far. So it's about that kind of the irrational market decisions we make and why we make them. And so let's see, like the first chapter he's talking about comparing. Chapter 1 is entitled The Truth About Relativity, Why Everything is Relative, Even When It Shouldn't Be. And he talks about when people are selling things, you look for comparisons, maybe subconsciously, you look for comparisons to help you make your decision. So if there are like 3 TVs, like say you're shopping for a TV and there are 3 TVs on display, sometimes the sellers might put in a decoy, one that nobody would want to buy anyway, but it makes another TV look better, so you'll be more inclined to buy the better TV instead of maybe the cheaper TV or something, because you'll think you're getting a better deal with the better TV, even though nobody would want to buy. See, I'm terrible at explaining it, so you'll have to read the book. Like one of the first examples he gives was that there's a, I think it's The Economist, it's a magazine or something, and they're selling it on their website. And you have 3 options. Yeah, TheEconomist.com. So you have 3 options if you want to subscribe to The Economist. You have The Economist online subscription for $60, the print subscription for $125, or the print and online subscription for the same price, $125. So you have those 3 options. Now, who in the world is going to buy the print subscription for $125 when you can get the print and online subscription for the same price? There's nobody that would want that. So why do they even have that as an option? The reason they have it as an option is because you'll compare that it has the same price, so you'll compare it with, should I get print or print and online for the same price? And then all of a sudden, the print and online for the same price seems like a better deal. See? Ooh, because you compare it, and then it seems like a better deal. And then you'll be more inclined to buy that instead of the online only for $60. And experimentally, you know, and he describes in the book how that's why they put that in there. Nobody's going to want to buy it, but it increases the sales of the other kind. So that's called using the decoy, or whatever he calls it in the book. So it's a really fascinating book, I think. Encourage everyone to check it out. I had heard about it on there was a podcast, and I'll see if I can find it and link to it in the show notes. It was another podcast with Derek Sivers, who I had mentioned in the last episode of The New Blather. Derek Sivers was the founder of CD Baby. So he was being interviewed. I'll try to find the podcast. There was a podcast in which he was interviewed, and he mentioned the book, and he mentioned a few other examples from the book, and I thought it was really interesting, so I looked it up at my local library, and they had it, so I put it on hold, and I checked it out. And I think that's it. So you got those three things to blather about, and that's the episode. Thanks for listening to this long and boring, terrible blathering. Bye.